How's it going?
All right. How are you doing?
I'm you know, fine. It's Monday.
Yeah. Somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Every week.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like it's like scheduled.
It's like it's how calendars function or something.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. So you're a robot then, right?
Apparently.
Is it like a Power Rangers thing? Or no, I guess it would be more like a... What was the other one where like the cat robots combined into one larger robot? Voltron? Are you like a Voltron thing?
God, I hope not, because the cats went inside the other cats. Anyway,
You and some kid from Utah are robot cats that connect into a giant...
Ew, especially don't say the kid part. Ugh, gross.
Well, you know, anyone who is younger than us is a kid.
That's how it works. Well, of course. And we are so old and decrepit. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, nobody's actually going to understand that thing you just made a reference to, though.
That's fine. We'll cut it out.
Okay.
Unless they just want to go listen to Upgrade.
Yes. Upgrade number 6. Dan, where can people go to find the show notes?
I wondered if we were ever going to start doing that. People don't read our show notes, do they?
No, no one ever reads our show notes. So
what is wrong with these people? We put work into our show notes. There are useful things in there.
Yeah, like not just anybody could go to Wikipedia and then copy and paste the link to a movie's page on Wikipedia.
Well, it's not even copy and paste. I click this little markdown extension thing I have in my Safari bar, and it creates a nice little markdown link.
Okay, well, I put the blood, sweat, and tears of copying and pasting into it, so... That's my workflow.
The blood, sweat, and tears of pasting a mobile website into our little app there, so I always have to take the M out.
Yeah. Yep.
For those who do want to read our show notes, I don't know why we're addressing the audience. This is so weird. It's in your podcast app, or you can go to defocus.co/whatever episode it is.
What episode is this, Dan? You're really bad. How many episodes?
19.
How many episodes of podcasts have you listened to where they mention the show notes, and then this was your first try at your show notes? This right here. This, like, maybe you could go to the website.
You know, I mean, who cares about... Just go to... I mean, listen mm-hmm. to the thing. Wait, it's... The show notes are attached to the audio. I don't know how people, like, miss that.
D is in dragon. E is in Eduardo.
I thought we were supposed to come up with beverages.
No, that's somebody else's shtick.
F as in Frankfurter.
Yes. O as in... Oh, are they?
C.
I'm only thinking of dirty things when that's not good.
I was going to say Charlie, but now we're just in the military alphabet.
Cookie. And that's good enough for me.
Delta Echo Foxtrot.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's most of the letters. Somebody else can figure it out.
Yeah,
So, Dan?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do we have follow-up of the ups of which we follow?
I mean, I got a list of stuff that just accumulates over the week. I don't know if we could call it follow-up. Did you get a chance to go out of your way and acquire a Little Caesar's pretzel bread pizza?
Oh, hell no.
With cheddar cheese sauce?
Blah, no. God, when I saw the commercial for that, I was utterly horrified. I've never seen anything so repulsive. And then I post it, saying that this is some repulsive thing, and of course everybody's like replying back like, oh man, where can I get one of those? So
I'm honestly surprised it wasn't sooner that somebody decided to make a pretzel bread pizza, because pretzel bread it's the new thing. Just make everything pretzel bread and it's fancy.
Well, it's not really even fancy, but I'm sure somebody else has done it. This is probably just the first wide-scale pizzatastrophe that has occurred about it.
Wide-scale pizzatastrophe?
Yes.
That's good. That's the kind of thing CNN would go with.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a cheesy headline.
You've really kept the puns down lately, both in the show and on the internet.
Well, it's hard to come up with them on the spot. I'm busy. Yeah.
It's mostly just that's what she said at this point.
No, that was just because I had argued with Casey. Well, not argued, but had a conversation with Casey.
Yeah.
But
that's all right. I don't think he's listened to that episode yet.
No, I don't think he's listened to any episode. It's fine. It's for the best. He claimed
to have listened to a couple.
Yeah, I know, but it's probably a good thing, because I think if he stopped where I think he stopped, then there's a couple real good ones and some real other ones in there. So maybe it's a good thing.
Yeah, and even if he did listen to it, the only way we would know is we'd get just, you know, a tweet that said hi, period, lowercase.
Mm-hmm. And then it'd be like, oh, crap, what did I do? And you have to start piecing together the detective story of, like, what could the hi mean? What happened recently? Did I say something? Is this a response to something that didn't get threaded? Who knows?
Of course it would be 3 hours later because, you know, he's an old man and goes to bed early and wakes up early.
Aw, let's be nice to him. I would like to have him back on the show. And for him to talk to us. If he ever listens to this. Hi, Casey. Hi. In 2017. How are things in the future?
How bored are you that you're listening to our show 3 years from now?
Maybe it'll just be like, it'll just come up on repeat. On like shuffle, randomly.
Accidentally. 3 years, he's finally got some free time after the kid is born. And he's like, oh man, I can finally catch up. And what does he go for? He goes for our show.
Well, I think isn't that like 18 years later? So wouldn't that be like 2022?
Well, I mean, don't they like start like sleeping at a reasonable hour at 3?
I have no idea.
I'm just making stuff up. I don't know anything about kids.
Okay. Well, evidently, since you didn't know about Nestle Pure Life fact of put a water bottle next to your kid's bed.
Oh, I got another one. Oh, this one doesn't have a fact.
Oh, well, that's terrible.
It just says good food, good life, and then it has a phone number you can call to talk to Nestle. What if we can get them on the line? We can ask them a couple questions.
No, please don't. I don't. No. This is not that kind of a show.
You, I want to discuss the purified water enhanced with minerals for taste.
Nope.
Hmm. That's from San Bernardino County. That's near you, right?
Well, yes, relatively. I mean, the amount of time I'd spend in the car, I might as well drive to Barstow or something, but yeah. Mm.
We have a listener who lives in Barstow, don't we?
Probably.
Somebody lives in Bakersfield or Barstow.
Okay, well, that's good. Somebody's got to live there.
They're, famous for being name-checked in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
They're famous for lots of things. None of them are very good.
I'm not familiar with anything other than that's the route to Vegas from LA, apparently.
Supposedly, they have a really big meth problem.
I mean, who doesn't?
No, well, of course. I mean, at this point, it's kind of lazy if you don't have a meth problem in your town.
I mean, how bad is your economy if you don't even have meth?
Even Albuquerque has meth, but...
Albuquerque invented meth.
I don't think they did.
I shouldn't say bad things about Albuquerque. I have a friend who's from Albuquerque.
Also, it's close to you. Someone could get really upset and be all like, hey, Breaking Bad was magnificent, and then come over and beat you up.
I don't think the selling point of Breaking Bad being good is that it took place in Albuquerque.
Okay. You think it was the writing? Or the acting? I'm sure it's not either one of those things.
Yeah, I would give it to the acting if I had to.
Oh, you don't like the writing?
The writing's not bad, but I think the acting is better. I'm not going to critique Breaking Bad because we will lose all of our listeners.
Oh, well, that's good because I haven't seen Breaking Bad.
It's not perfect, Joseph. I will tell you that.
I know. Well, so few things are, really. But everybody loves it. So, and every time I say, oh, I haven't seen it, everybody like looks at me like I am confessing to a murder.
Do they get angry and then buy it for you on iTunes?
No, that'd be expensive.
That's just your move?
Yeah. I mean, well, also, it was $15 for Rocky Horror Picture Show, so it was a no-brainer. Worth every penny. But, I mean, it would have been nicer if it was cheaper, but I imagine that's the October seasonal markup. Also available for rent for, like, $3 or $4, depending on your service. Yeah. Of course, I almost got it on Google Play because you can capture things from there. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll make a GIF. And then I was like, this sounds difficult because that's actually kind of a pain in the butt to do the screen recording stuff. And then I'd have to watch the movie in standard definition and it's all going to be gross and nasty. So I'd much rather just watch it on my TV and say, screw it. I'm not making a GIF.
What did you want to make for this episode?
I don't know. I didn't know until I was going to rewatch it, and then I was sure I was going to pick something. Like when we did Pirates of Silicon Valley, it jumped out of me through the painting, which one I wanted to pick.
So how many times have you seen Rocky Horror Picture Show?
The whole thing or just parts?
Enough to consider it a viewing, I suppose. I don't know. What's that, like 2 songs, 3 songs?
I don't know. Let's go with a lot, I guess. Not really recently, though. It used to be on like Comedy Central or whatever all the time in October. You'd turn it on and it would just be some part of the movie. Hopefully the beginning part. Because the movie, well, I like it a lot, and I obviously recommended it to you, and I told you you needed to watch it as a fan of Tim Curry. As part of our sorry, this is a two-parter or something. To recap the previous episode, Dan, for those who are somehow tuning in at Defocus 19 and want to know what we're talking about.
Skipping over the other ones?
Yeah, the fact that we'll just have that little bit at the beginning of the episode that says previously on Defocused.
You can just say previously on the prompt.
Oh, God.
The guys talk about the new iPads as well as Clue, in which, Tim Curry, I think was our highlight from that movie because he was utterly fantastic in Clue. And I got to say, in terms of making this a Tim Curry double-hander, double whatever, I think, he's probably the best part of it. I mean, he's just going like 170% in this movie, which is all kinds of insane.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Tim Curry is the reason to watch this, I believe. Mm-hmm. I mean, other than just being astonished at the fact that Susan Sarandon at one point was a young woman.
Is this the first young Susan Sarandon movie you'd see?
Probably not, but I mean, Susan Sarandon's been like 40 for like 30 years or something.
I'm not sure I'd go with that number, but yeah, I mean, she was for sure younger in that role because it was the 70s, so that happens. But yeah, there was that.
And I was rather shocked to see Barry Bostwick in this movie. I didn't look anything up before you sent this to me, but I'm just used to seeing him with white hair. But no, this was young Barry Bostwick.
Mm-hmm. Another case where someone was younger in the 70s than they are now.
And looked like an entirely different person.
No, he looks and sounds basically the same. He has different glasses. And different hair color. Big deal.
So what? Meatloaf's the same, basically.
Yeah.
I enjoyed him. He was in it a lot less than I thought he would be.
Is that why you enjoyed him?
No, I enjoyed his enthusiasm. For most of the time, I had no idea what he was actually singing. I watched the scene twice, but I pieced together his plot from the rest of the movie. But, you know, he had a lot of enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
And a motorcycle. I don't know why the motorcycle was in the freezer, too.
Well, it didn't really... Okay. As I alluded to earlier when you were asking me what you just watched, and then I was like, oh god, you're just watching it for the first time like 10 minutes before we record. There's not really a strong narrative that makes a lot of sense in this movie, but there's not really supposed to be, because it's not really about any of that. It is intentionally goofy. So I was a little surprised by your question about...
Well, I mean, coming in essentially knowing nothing about it other than the stills I've seen, or there are some gifs of it online here and there, just being vaguely aware that such a thing does exist, I didn't know what to make of the thing. I mean, I knew that it's this sort of cultural phenomenon that is still in theaters and people go and they perform alongside with, and they have a bond with all of the music and this and that. But I thought there would be more, not more, but like the movie aspect of this movie is essentially non-existent. The rest of it is the stuff that made it live on, and I see that stuff. But I mean, you almost don't even want to call it a movie. It's a social engagement platform. I don't know what to call it. It's a thing that people enjoy and they take part in.
Okay, but well, you know, it was a play first, right? A musical on the stage.
Yes, okay. I read that.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure. You were surprised Barry Bostwick was in the movie, so I'm trying to gauge where we're at.
I read the majority of the Wikipedia article.
Huh.
So, longest running movie in history is basically what it said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. But I mean, give me a rundown on this. What do you make of the thing?
What do I make of the thing? I think it is a lot of fun. It is a very subversive, especially for its time, film. I don't participate in any way in any of the theater things because I don't want to be around people. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to stand up in my apartment and sing or dance along to parts of this movie. Which I think is totally normal and reasonable. But
please, for a moment, just offer a little more specificity on that for our audiences so they can fully generate an image in their head.
Oh, well, there's no costume stuff going on, unfortunately. But
you sing or dance along with certain songs?
Yeah, well, not really dancing, but just like, you know, you just stand up and you're just like, yeah, that's great. And then you sit back down. And that sort of thing.
I don't know that I have any movies that compel me to stand up out of my seat.
Well, that's because you like David Fincher movies.
Mm,
you're glued to the edge of your seat because you're waiting for the suspenseful moment for when something's going to happen.
The whole movies are suspenseful. That's why I enjoy them.
Yes. Well, yeah. What did you think of the suspense of Rocky Horror Picture Show?
In terms of not knowing where it was going, A+. I had no idea what was happening at any given point.
Okay. That's not really suspense. Yeah. So, basically, you don't like the movie.
I did not say that at all.
Yeah, well, that's just because you don't want the listeners to judge you, because you're afraid that your opinion will not be well received.
No, what I said is basically what I think. It's hard to judge it as a movie because it's less of a movie and more of a thing to be experienced and enjoyed. And the songs are good, most of them. I like the more upbeat ones, naturally. I'm sure a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. And it's fun and weird. It's very weird. I mean, especially when you consider it being 1975. It's an incredibly strange movie. And just trying to put it in that context makes it all the more entertaining to analyze and watch.
Okay.
No.
I just don't believe you. I think you're just like, oh god, what is this movie? What did I just watch?
Maybe it's just that I'm not huge on musicals, which I'm not sure that I could name another musical that I've seen. I know I have, but
pretty much any Disney cartoon is a musical, Dan.
You've seen Disney cartoons. I watch a lot of Disney cartoons.
Yeah.
Aladdin. Aladdin's a good one.
Uh-huh.
Substantially less lingerie in Aladdin.
Mm-hmm. Well, he does show her the world, though.
In that movie, it's more literal than figurative, though.
I don't know. Those dirty Disney animators.
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. That's all conjecture, though, because it was misinterpreted or something, right?
Maybe. Yeah, it was definitely a magic carpet ride. Wink, wink. Shining, shimmering, splendid.
That's
enough of that.
Yeah, you're ruining children's movies for people.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, I don't think any children listen to this podcast.
Well, does Kyle count?
That way, no, he's a kid, not a child.
Oh.
Plus, so it would be gravely disturbing. It would be gravely irresponsible to let anyone younger than 18 probably listen to this.
I think it would be irresponsible to release this episode. I think it would be irresponsible to release any of our episodes. I think we should probably just cancel the podcast and delete it from the internet.
See, if we were interested in being responsible and concerned about the thoughts of others, maybe. But We didn't start this with any goal in mind, so you know, yeah. We're just gonna
screw you guys. This
we do this for us. Oh, now we're back to a Breaking Bad reference that you're not gonna get.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for really killing the moment, Dan.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Okay.
It's the yin and yang of the. Well, actually, we're both probably the yang. Which one's the downer? We're both the downer.
Yeah, we're a couple of yangs, all right. No, but no, I have no idea.
Where would you like to start with discussing this movie?
I thought we already did.
Kinda. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that we've really gotten into it. We're still kind of dancing around the topic.
Well, it's appropriate for the film. It's just a jump to the left. And then a step to the right. Come on, Dan.
I didn't know this was a fill in the blank. See, I'm not used to these participation events.
Dan.
Yeah.
Dan.
Yeah.
Do you even remember any of the lyrics to any of these songs?
Well, I certainly remember that one because as I told you, that song was on the Drew Carey Show soundtrack for some reason. I think they may have actually done a musical episode where they all danced along to the Time Warp. But
okay, wait. You didn't see this movie.
Yes.
You don't really care for it, but
I didn't
the
say
Drew
that.
Carey Show.
That was a long time ago. I don't believe. Well, I'm pretty sure that was the influence of my parents.
Uh huh.
Both because they're from Ohio, and so was Drew Carey.
It was pride, state pride.
No, it was just one of those stupid sitcoms that they watched.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because, hey, they made a reference to that place that we know of.
Which they obviously were nowhere near because it was all entirely shot on sound stages in Los Angeles.
Of course.
Yes. Okay.
Back in the golden heydays of three-camera sitcoms that are clearly fake sets that have stairs that go to nowhere, like Roseanne.
Mm-hmm. I didn't like Roseanne.
What part?
All of it.
All of it?
Mm-hmm. Everybody loves it, though, but so that's probably a strike against me. So you've got Rocky Horror that you don't like, and I've got Roseanne that I don't like.
I remember it existing and, you know, mm-hmm. John Goodman, but I don't remember anything about it other than Roseanne is loud.
Uh-huh. Well, let's give it the defocused seal of disapproval.
Do we have a button that makes like a quacking noise?
No. Well, it's really hard to set up the sound stuff, and then the function keys would need to do things, and I'd have to have stickers or something. I'm not managing that.
Yeah, I can't write on my keyboard with a Sharpie because my keyboard is black.
Yes.
Well, I guess they do make silver Sharpies.
Well, I mean, or you get some of those the gel ink paint pens. Puffy paint. Remember puffy those? Paint.
Glitter paint and puffy paint.
Yes, yes. And you could do the thing with where you dot the both of the ends of the letter so that it has like little circles on every little corner of every letter.
It's like the 14-year-old girl's version of serifs.
I know, but wouldn't that be charming? I think Johnny Ive should get on that. I think instead of you just throw Yosemite out, just throw the whole thing out, just do it over again with puffy paint, skeuomorphic puffy paint. We're going full Forrestal if he was a young child and also really into, like, I don't know, Lisa Frank stuff or something. We'll go full on into that. That would be great.
Just throw the Helvetica out with the bathwater.
Mm-hmm. No more centered fave bar. No more. None of that. Just puffy paint. Let's get on that. Free idea.
I have no idea where that came from or how we got there.
Well, I was hoping that you'd take that segue to talk about your perilous adventures in updating your software on your machines that don't work in kernel panic, and they're your production machines.
Yeah, I beta test some apps. What of it? Mm-hmm. I have the old version still installed. They run side by side, but I accidentally loaded a couple shots in the new one to test it out, and they're not backwards compatible, so I'm just rolling with it. And to be fair, it kernel panics in all versions of the software if you don't pay attention, or I guess if you work too hard at kernel panics, that's basically how it goes.
So your version of Mac OS X, which is still Mavericks, or is it Yosemite?
Mavericks.
Okay. So Mavericks is kernel panicking when you're using the beta version of Nuke 9.
Mavericks kernel panics when you have two Nuke comps open, a Hero project open, and Final Cut Pro open all at the same time and try to command tab between them to do some work in the other one while the other one is rendering. Yes.
I see.
And it is almost almost specifically caused by Maverick's fun new feature of the memory compression, because it will run all the way up to 15.99 gigabytes used, and then it'll freeze for a while. And if you're not fast enough hitting the pseudo purge key that I have mapped with Keyboard Maestro, it will hit 16 out of 16, and then the whole thing just locks up. And it kills itself in random ways. I mean, sometimes it freezes and you have to, hold down the power button to turn it off. Sometimes it just reboots itself for you. One I saw today that I've never seen before is all three of my monitors, glitch in, it looks like a fake screen that somebody developed for, when you get hacked in a movie. They all, garbled in terms of, red and purple pixelated blocks. It went right monitor, center monitor, left monitor, and then it rebooted itself. Actually, no, it didn't reboot itself. It logged me out. And then when I logged back in, it started over, which was very interesting.
I see.
But yeah, since trying to do a few things in some unnamed beta software, I get some random errors, just unknown. As soon as you open the app, you get something that says unknown command. It's okay, well, I didn't give you a command, but cool, that's fine.
That's troubling. I think you need to do a clean install. Clean Dan.
Clean. I could probably use a shower. It's a little warm in here. I love it. Still, nothing makes you more uncomfortable than saying I get sweaty when it gets hot in my office.
Yes. Yes. Just gross. I don't want to know. Ugh.
Is it just your Florida past that sweat makes you so uncomfortable?
Maybe it is, Dan. It's my post-traumatic sweat disorder. I have no idea. I just don't care.
Post-traumatic Florida disorder?
Mm-hmm. Well... There's a lot of problems with Florida.
Huh. Yeah, you probably can't be blamed for something like that.
Mm-hmm. For being blamed for Florida? All of Florida?
for having post-traumatic Florida disorder. My bad, guys.
Florida's all my fault.
I mean, you did spend a lot of time there. We don't know how much you caused.
Mm-hmm.
You just left it in shambles and bailed.
Yeah.
For fancy Los Angeles.
Didn't lock the doors or anything. Left the toaster oven on. Left the iron going.
Left the sinks running, so mm-hmm. they would know that all of the houses were robbed by the same bandits.
Mm-hmm. The Wet Bandits.
The Wet Bandits, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a different movie, Dan.
Yeah, I hear it's a bad way to go, because then they can tie you to all the other crimes.
Yeah, well, and then you can come back in the sequel, and you can be the Sticky Bandits, and then Tim Curry can be in the movie, and then Tim Curry was in Clue and in Rocky Horror Picture Show, and then we're back to the movie. Yay, I did it!
Yeah, I mean, you didn't get to Kevin Bacon, but that's fine, because Tim Curry's better than Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, well...
Now we're back title, to Curried Bacon, for the love of...
You can't reuse that title, Dan.
I don't want to.
Okay, well, it sounds like you want to reuse that title, but I'm telling you right now, the rules that I've just invented specifically say no reuse titles.
The rules set forth in the Geneva Podcasting Convention?
Yeah, well, it's our constitution. I have amended it and voted for it, and it's in the Constitution as an amendment now that you
did.
You
I miss
can't
that meeting.
That. Well, it's not really a very large democracy. It's more of a representative democracy, and I represent you in all of these matters according to our Constitution, and it's signed and done. There we go. No reuse titles. You're welcome. Don't forget to vote.
Oh, man, we should talk about politics.
No, we should not do that. Let's go back to the movie.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, there are subversive political themes inside of this film from 1975.
Yeah, the iconic imagery of the American Gothic painting in the mm-hmm. in the opening wedding scene there.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just... It might be the most campy scene in the history of movies.
Are you sure there's still a lot of this movie to go through and you're going to use campiest scene right then, the first thing?
For the wedding? Yeah, because it was just so cookie cutter, cut and dry, and it was clearly going that direction to contrast with what came next, but it was absurdly campy.
Yeah, well, no, but... Okay. See, the thing I'm saying is that there's stuff that I think is campier than that in this film itself.
Go on.
Well, for instance, there happens to be the whole science thing with the Frankenstein-ish themes, and then the space aliens with the ray guns that have little red lightning bolts that are glued on. Those things, I think, maybe kinda sorta, little bit, wee bit more campy.
But there was something unique about those scenes. At least they were playing off of something and being silly in a different direction, as opposed to just this over-the-top campy wedding scene that's just kind of there to set everything up.
Okay.
Again, really not related to anything other than introducing the characters. Although, are we supposed to notice Tim Curry as the priest in the background of that, along with the other folks who are pretending to be the American Gothic people?
Well, I don't know if you're supposed to. I did.
Right.
I don't know if they fill out a questionnaire afterwards to make sure you got it, but yes, they are present.
Are they supposed to be connected to their characters later on? Because yeah. Is that like their day jobs?
No, they're you can see him turn around and talk to them. It's like they're scouting out or something. I don't know the actual story behind it, but they're of course there because they are observing the events of this wedding. And then, of course, we see them later in different costumes.
I did like how they were kind of like the background singers for the two main characters when they were all singing their song about how happy they were to be engaged, and they were just going about their day setting up the funeral and occasionally chiming in just to say basically Janet to rhyme with some of the other words.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that part. It was funny.
Yes.
See? I don't hate the movie.
Yeah, that was really convincing, though. Well,
you would know if I hated this movie. I would tell you I hated the movie.
No, I still think you're afraid of our listeners. Hello, listeners. Terrorize Dan, please.
I'm not afraid of you. I'll meet you at the playground after class. We'll settle this like men.
You can meet them in Albuquerque.
Yeah, I'll meet you in Albuquerque.
Yes. And so the other thing I was going to ask is, when you say the other characters, you do realize that Riff Raff, the guy that plays the straggly hair guy with the hunchback, you know that he is actually the guy who's responsible for this whole thing, right?
I did not know that.
Yes. Richard O'Brien.
He said that in a very odd way.
He did the music, and he, of course, was in this, and he also, you know, did the play. Like, so it's...
Oh, yeah, I did notice some mention of the fact that the cast from the better performances from the history of the story was in the movie.
Yeah, well, so I think up till this point, Tim Curry was the only one who had played Dr. Frankfurter. But I don't know the history of this because I really am not that big on it. That big of a uber nerd about it, but I think that is how it goes. And... this does have some direction in it that is slightly better than stage direction, where they move around the sets that they have in a better way than just constantly addressing the camera. But of course, that only happens a couple of times, really, where the rest of the movie is by and large mostly just about doing the song and mostly just about, even there's even a theater performance inside of a musical inside of the musical at the end of this. So it is very stagey and musical like for those sorts of things. So obviously, since you're not into that, then you're not won over by it. In terms of directing, I'm sure. 'Cause the rest of it is pretty... Not really like intricately shot or laboriously planned or anything. They're just pretty. It's pretty average. Like a lot of medium shots of people, just stuff. People hanging out.
It would be interesting to see, because obviously, I mean, being a stage performance, you're kind of limited in how you set things up for the audience. But there are certain things that would work in a theater setting that also work here, like the sort of the bait and switch thing he does when he goes into the rooms and Janet and Brad think it's Janet and Brad the secondary times. That mm-hmm. setup with, you know, the 90 degree to the bed camera where they do sort of the silhouetted thing, that would totally work in a theater setting, and I think it totally worked in the movie too.
Yeah. It was very nice. To quote, but but you might be objecting when you don't really appreciate a lot of the movie, and the parts that don't make sense is probably the stuff of people running around and kind of the loopy camera work for that stuff. Were you totally on board with all of that?
No, I agree with what you just said about this being sort of, I mean, it's minimally directed in some places and they do a little bit more work. I mean, like what's the main room called where they have the birthing chamber, whatever you want to call it. That room they did more with it because it was a full 360 set. But you know, like the theater performance itself, you've really only got a couple different angles on that. And you know, it is about the music, but they spent a lot of time in that birthing chamber and adjoining rooms, and especially in the, you know, when they first come into the house, that's basically shot as you would shoot anything. But that's basically when the musical kind of kicks into high gear, I guess. But I don't know a whole lot of movies from the mid 70s to compare to, so the directing itself, it didn't get in the way of the music, which I guess is probably the biggest thing.
So complimentary.
I don't know what to say about it.
Well, I don't know. Okay, well, I'm just trying to find out, because you are the guinea pig that has seen this for exactly one time.
Because as you've mentioned, this is about the music, and that's what I was trying to pay attention to. I knew at least that much going into it.
Mm-hmm. So what's your favorite song then on your one viewing of it? And not including your Drew Carey.
I told you, I like Meatloaf song. Uh-huh. I don't know what the hell it was called. I don't know the names of any of the songs.
Yeah. Well, his name was Eddie in the movie.
Yes.
So
can't I call him Meatloaf? That's a better name than Eddie.
Well,
particularly because his name is Meatloaf and they ate him. I found that humorous.
Yeah.
Although I'm not entirely sure why he would have been under the table.
Well, that was obviously for show.
Well, yeah.
You gotta work your tablescapes.
Work my tablescapes?
Yes, work your tablescapes. I guess.
I don't even know. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That was an incredibly odd scene.
I thought you watched Food Network. Don't you watch Crazy Sandra and her show she used to have, where she would just make like the craziest, stupidest, most horrible, obscenely terrible food, and like be stammering and slurring her words through the whole episode, and then at the end of it they would get to the tablescape and it would just be a total mess.
No, but that sounds fantastic. I would watch that show.
Yeah, like one time she was like, I'm gonna have a denim theme, and so it was just like denim and like different cake platters all stacked up. It's just crazy, like it's just black and white theme, only black and white cake platters stacking a bunch of stuff. Anyway, tablescapes.
Oh, denim just ruins everything. But that scene I did enjoy, because that was another instance where the pace actually slowed down, and Tim Curry using the electric carver on the meat and just sort of like pointing it at do we just call him Rocky Horror? Because that's just like the weirdest thing to call him.
Well, it's a weird movie, Dan.
Yeah, but like, you know, just pointing at him to like mind his manners and not drink his wine until everyone's ready, and then just the way they're walking around, like pouring the wine in the cups and just kind of like walking and just pouring it on the table as they go from cup to cup was amusing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that scene too. It's interesting from a set design perspective, of course, because of the totally cheesy fake body and the reveal. But of course, my favorite part of the scene, like you said, is the electric carver. And my second favorite part is, of course, Tim Curry's line that it is a tender subject. And then everyone just spits out their food, except for Rocky, who just doesn't get it.
And I like that this is one of the instances where Dr. Great Scott is basically just, he has a moment of exposition, but as with most of the things in this movie, the exposition is so completely absurd that it's not like it's setting up the movie or ruining the movie or explaining the movie. It's just, oh, well, that's just another wacky thing that goes into this big mix of whatever this is we're watching. And this is like the only movie I can think of where exposition does absolutely nothing for the plot other than confuse you a little bit more and intrigue you a little bit more.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, his background and why he's there and all that stuff doesn't make a ton of sense. I mean,
it doesn't make any sense. Let's be clear about that.
Eddie is his nephew, but at the same time, that's awfully coincidental. So, you know, but it doesn't really matter. He's there. That's the important part. And he has a really kind of ridiculous accent. And so I appreciate that.
The contraption that pulled him from downstairs all the way to upstairs, was that supposed to be a magnet that was pulling his wheelchair?
Yes, it was a triple electromagnet. Remember?
Yeah, three phases. All three of them came out of the wall. It was like,
And then he goes on his little joyride.
That's an interesting multi-directional magnet.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like a fun ride, though.
We'll call it Dr. Scott's Wild Ride. We'll open a theme park.
And then you can't even call him the narrator, but the criminologist character, that's something that definitely feels like it came from the theater. I think it still sort of works here because he's yet another character who's just completely inscrutable in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, but I like him. I'm pretty sure he had no idea what was going on when this was being made. recorded all of his performances one day, and he's just like, all right, well, it's a paycheck.
It had a little bit of a Twilight Zone thing, like his outro there, where, you know, the whole the human race is pests or ants or whatever just crawling around on the earth. That felt very Twilight Zone-y, but yeah, there's no way he would have any context for what the hell he was saying.
Yeah.
You know what that guy's name was?
I don't remember.
Charles the Gray.
Oh, that's right. Because I made that joke with what's his face?
Yeah.
That
good old what's his face?
Good old what's his face? No, but so anyway, what do you think about the beginning of the movie, the middle of the movie, and the end of the movie? Like, if you were to just compartmentalize and encapsulate those things, because they feel distinctly different to me. Like, it doesn't feel like a continuing narrative arc, because of course it isn't really a continuing narrative arc. So it's really just about the pieces and performances inside of each of those things that I read as being totally different from everything else. And I happen to prefer watching the beginning and the middle of the movie more than I prefer watching the end. But I don't know what your feelings on this are.
I agree to a certain extent. The tricky part, I think, is going to be trying to compartmentalize and figure out where you consider the ending of the beginning and the beginning of the middle.
Mm-hmm.
The middle to the end kind of like melts into itself, but I think that's a little bit more distinct. What do you consider the end of the beginning?
The end of the beginning for me is when Rocky Horror is animated. And then the middle is everything from that until they use the transducer. And then the ending is everything from after they get de-Medusa'd on the stage forward. That's how I read the structure of it.
Now, the birth, that comes before they all go to their separate bedroom chambers, right?
Yes, yes.
That's kind of what I would have marked the end of the beginning, where they go off, and then it's the... because, I mean, you see Susan Sarandon sort of sliding into this unintentional acceptance of this odd world where she starts to participate, but I think that kind of marks the moment where she's all in. Especially considering when she goes back to...
It's an interesting choice of words there, Dan.
I didn't actually mean it as a euphemism, but it does work that way.
Mm.
You know, that the scene, just, you know, jumping ahead a little bit, the scene with Rocky Horror in the tank reminded me a lot of the scene from Zoolander with the powerful tea. Just particularly in the way it was shot. But you know, the beginning of the movie still has a lot of the mystery and the you're with Barry Bostwick and Susan Sarandon. You're kind of on their side going, what the hell is this world they've stumbled into? And this is obviously it's terrifying for them and their sort of G-shucks super white world. It's intriguing to sort of see how they play off these random strange characters they've run into. And that's kind of where they get, you know, you get the parallel with any sort of a horror movie, is that they're thrust into some obscure, you know, Texas Chainsaw family world, and how they deal with it without, you know, freaking out and running away and then, you know, tripping the alarm that they're freaked out and, you know, just get killed. But the middle is kind of the world building that is insane, because that's where all of the pieces come together that sort of allow for this. I mean, it's a vague narrative, but the narrative itself of the aliens and the sort of the love interests for Tim Curry's character, and how this incredibly odd family lives in their own little side of the world, just doing things by their own rules. But like, all of that is in the middle, and that I find fascinating, because it's completely I have no frame of reference for that stuff. And for the beginning and the end, I mean, you can kind of parallel that to any sort of a horror movie. The end is obviously a little bit more basic musical, but the middle bit is just insane. I don't know a better way to describe it.
Well, insane how? Insane, like, just because of what's occurring, or insane because of what's implied, or insane because of the songs, or insane because of the narrative? I mean, or is it all of the above?
Well, when you put it together, in obviously the story is the mashup of all of these characters, their setting. The songs are just kind of the fun part, but the characters, their settings, the things they do, and the things that we learn that they have done, that all sort of starts to come one right after another in the middle there, where we learn, you know, who's in charge, who does what. You know, we learn that all of these characters have their own role within this house. I mean, obviously, we're led down a false path with Riff Raff and Magenta. But like, you know, the structure of this household and the history of, you know, we get a little hint of where Eddie came from and what he's all about, and this whole idea of what they're doing with Rocky, and all of that stuff it's like the Addams Family on LSD or something. Like, you get a look into this world of these characters. It's less about Janet and Brad at that point. It's more about just all of these people in the world they play in, which is apparently completely normal to them. This is just like their everyday life. Well, I mean, we have the basic premise that this is like their was it annual convention. Do we know if it's annual or biannual or whenever the hell they feel like it? But all of that stuff, like the character relationships with just that group of people, is the middle section. And that's the part that is just, their motivations are counter to what you would expect. The things they have done are surprising. The things they are doing are kind of silly because it's a little bit of a horror movie. But the overarching character relationship stuff between Dr. Frankfurter and his current love and past love, and like, you know, when Janet goes after Rocky, and then yeah. Tim Curry basically chases her around the house. Like, all of that stuff is...
You better wise up, Janet Weiss.
Yes, yeah, so it's a very nice wordplay throughout this movie. But all of that stuff is the insane character relationship stuff that I find fascinating. I don't understand it. I wouldn't claim to know everything that's going on. But that's the stuff that I find interesting.
Well, and I think that that's kind of the thing with this movie, is like, you don't need to like deeply understand what's going on. It's just sort of fun. But that's where the ending for me is different, because I feel like I need to understand that, because it's taken a different tone, sort of, to the musical numbers there. I mean, it's not that it's bad, it's just like I would rather watch the high energy, crazy shenanigans
At the beginning of the movie.
That's the sensation of being thrown into this world for the first time. In the third act, it kind of takes like a Hamlet turn where, you know, it's he kind of sees the end coming, and he has his sort of last hurrah sad song there, and then it gets weird.
He's going home. And there's the whole alien motif is definitely on Maximum Alien at that point. And I don't know if you also interpreted this, but at the beginning of the movie, like you're saying with American Gothic, he's holding the what's it called,
the pitchfork?
Yeah, the pitchfork. And then at the end of the movie, his little ray gun is a pitchfork.
Yeah, I noticed that. a peculiar callback.
It really seemed like an effective ray gun, but it's not really the point.
Well, yeah, three lasers instead of one, so
yeah, three zigzagging lasers. They were red. At that part is just like, it's okay. If I was watching it, or if it was on TV and it was the beginning, I'd be like, oh, this is good. And then I'd be like, all right, well, time to go to do some groceries or something. And then turn it off after they all get turned to stone.
Tim Curry is still turned up to 11 in the third act there, but in terms of what it's actually happening, you don't have that same feeling of these two Anglo characters thrust into this incredibly unusual situation with these. You can't even call these people weird or unusual. It's just that they're
alien.
Sure. I mean, even aliens would look at Tim Curry and go, what are you doing?
but it's magnificent.
If an alien was walking down one sidewalk and Tim Curry was coming at them, they would cross the street and walk down the other side. Just like, good Lord.
But that's fine. You know, to each their own. His performance is magnificent.
It is.
And one of the things that I find absolutely hilarious, aside from the carving scene with the electric blade, we get a couple good glares from him when he's using it, but there's also when he goes and he kills Eddie with the pick.
Yeah.
And then he walks out of there, the performance of him walking out and just holding out his bloodied gloves for them to be removed by Magenta is hilarious.
I did watch that twice, because he's just kind of like, ew, gross, pull these things off of me. He just looked the other way. Just kind of dangles his hands out there.
Mm-hmm. It's quite good.
After he just chased Meatloaf into an ice locker with a pickaxe.
Yeah. And nobody really seemed to mind, which is strange. But what's-her-face, played by Little Nell, she did not seem to care that he was. I mean, she was kind of like, oh no, he's dead, but she wasn't like, I'm leaving or something. She was sort of like, oh well, that sucked, I'm really sad about it. But
she got sad later at the when they started talking about him at the dinner table.
Yeah, but it wasn't really okay. Well, it's a little different to be that sad and to be like, oh hey, you murdered him with the axe in front of my face, and then we're gonna have dinner right now.
It was a mercy killing, presumably. Mm-hmm. Because he no longer had a portion of his brain. Is
that from the lobotomy,
right? Which it took me a while to gather that that's what was on his forehead there. I thought he was just like knocked out and been put in the freezer, and that was the remnants of whatever they used to hit him in the head.
No, it was a frontal lobotomy. It's curious you would give someone a lobotomy and then pose them on their motorcycle inside of the freezer, but the walk-in freezer.
Curious is a good word for that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's funny because you get a good set piece from that.
He, if I'm not mistaken, he had his name on his T-shirt.
Oh, he did. It said Eddie on his t-shirt. It said Meatloaf on his t-shirt. Which name are you talking about?
I think it said Ed or Eddie on his shirt.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe he forgets his name. He'd have a lobotomy after all.
And he's a,
it's his name tag. If he's you know, wandering around lost after his lobotomy.
I like that he's known as an ex-delivery boy.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
sometimes you're just too good to deliver things on your motorcycle.
Right, but he hasn't moved on to anything else. He hasn't defined himself in any way. He's between opportunities.
He's between opportunities.
He's between ex-delivery boy and whatever the road presents him, man.
Mm-hmm. He's got a lot on his mind.
A little less now.
Good stuff. So what do you think of the ancillary characters aside from Tim Cook? I know that you are in love with Bob, with Eddie, with Meatloaf. But what are your feelings on Magenta and Riff Raff and et cetera's? Do you care?
I find Riff Raff to be unsettling. He's creepy looking. He also reminds me, I mean, a fair amount of this movie, since it's like the only silly horror point of reference in my brain, reminds me of Young Frankenstein, and he does give me a little bit of an Igor vibe. Marty Feldman, obviously, taking it a different direction, but he creeps me out. He's clearly not super into his job, and we kind of find out why at the end there. But the other characters, if I can keep them straight, you know, from Magenta, from Columbia, from, I'm looking at all their names right now, I just sort of like, they appear to me to be just co-conspirators in this sort of anarchistic world that they live in. So I don't have a whole lot of feeling about them on an individual level, other than the fact that they are, they're like the Joker's posse.
Yeah. The word you're looking for is accomplice. But I'm not a huge Columbia fan. Mostly because her voice is just so piercing, but
I mean, there's some good coffee that comes out of Columbia, but you know,
Dan.
I'm out of coffee. It doesn't get here for another 2 days, so I'm like freaking out.
Oh, you're doing the delivery formerly known as Tonks, the blue bottle.
Yeah, it's
you're hitting the bottle hard.
The first two blue bottle have been so tasty.
Oh well, I went to Blue Bottle on Saturday because I was going to go to work and I needed to drive to Burbank. So screw it, I'll just drive through downtown, and got off on San Mateo Street there. Oh, I'm sorry, Mateo Street, and go to the formerly known as Handsome building since Blue Bottle bought them. Walk inside, looks almost exactly the same, except they totally changed the menu. Remember how they were so like milk phobic and like so controlling about what could go into things before? Totally changed their tune, and now everything has you know, milk and chicory coffee and all that stuff. I don't actually drink milk. I just always thought it was strange that they were so authoritarian about their views on what should go inside of coffee. But
when the menu is like five items and it's basically like small espresso, large espresso, or small, medium, large latte.
Yeah, and then you're like, give me my liter of coffee.
Right. Well, sorry, they don't call it a latte, do they? They just call it coffee with milk.
Mm-hmm. Café au lait. No, but it was good. It was good coffee. They're still making good stuff. Not sure if I'm gonna keep driving down there, but I'm just glad to know that it's there. And also, I don't like to do the mail order thing because then I'd be stuck waiting, or I'd have too much or something. So it's just more effective for me to go to coffee than to have coffee come to me.
Yeah, there's never too much. I get three bags every 2 weeks, and we always go through it.
Maybe you have a bit of a problem, Dan. There's two people and three bags of coffee. And what were we talking about? Yeah. 8 ounce bags? Dime bags? What am I talking about?
I don't know. I make them strong, but that's not the point. But you drive all the way to downtown for coffee?
Well, it was on the way.
Is it?
Well, I was leaving from an area of Los Angeles where that was on the way to Burbank for me. In a sort of roundabout way, it added like 10 minutes to the drive.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
because you got to go. Remember, there's the Santa Monica Mountains that divide the West Side from the Valley. California's beautiful San Fernando Valley.
Yes. And I was on TV the other day.
Good. And on that other side, in the valley, a place that Cher advises Ty not to go to, in Clueless, so that should give you a hint. On that side, you get to Burbank, which is just north of downtown, but on the other side of the mountain. So from the west side, you can either drive over Sepulveda, or you can take the canyon roads over, or you can drive through Hollywood and take Highland up. Highland, like the writing app. Slash street. Which is probably more known for being a street. I would say. Street.
There's a fun intersection between Highland and Fountain there. I took a picture of the street signs. There's a gas station there. And a Sizzler. There's a Sizzler at the corner of like Highland and Fountain. Well, it's like a half block north.
I wonder how John August feels about that. If he's just like, this intersection should be better.
Well, it's supposedly a shortcut, right?
Yeah, I guess. Oh,
that's the whole point.
I was on Highland doing my commute very slowly the other day, and I could read a sign that, because I was going so slowly, that there was a... They started doing this thing at some point, I guess maybe in the 70s or 80s, where they were designating different intersections as squares. They would name it after like some star or starlet, and then say something something square. And so I'm passing through this really cruddy, tiny, dumb looking intersection, and it's like Carol Burnett Square. And I was like, this is the saddest thing in the world. Like I would if I were Carol Burnett, I'd be like, it's okay. You really don't need to name this intersection after me. This is not a good intersection.
that's what she gets for always breaking the fourth wall and laughing in the middle of all of her bits.
Well, I thought that was the other guy on the show. I don't know. I never really watched it because I was not alive.
I think it was the whole show.
We break the fourth wall. Hello, listeners. I'm talking to you again.
You did in a sort of roundabout way reach back to some of our not follow-up that I wrote down here. Yeah, I too
they
did,
call that a reach around.
Moving past that, I did go to a new coffee shop this weekend in Scottsdale that had really, really surprisingly good ratings, which mean nothing because I think Starbucks gets like a 9.4 Yelp rating around here. But it was the weirdest thing I'd ever seen. It was like the Truman Show of hipster coffee shops, because the barista, this dude, had superb hipster mustache and glasses that were clearly not prescription, and giant sink stoppers in his ears and a funky hat and this and that and all the clothes. But you know how like a good coffee shop will sell you like the equipment for making your own, like a pour over or a burr grinder or something? Their little display had like the things that you find at like Target. It was what is that terrible brand? Just like the stuff that you find in SkyMall in terms of grinders and coffee makers. And it was the weirdest, like fake, like it has to look like a coffee shop, but not really know anything about coffee. And it was just full of obviously people in there looking at Facebook, but it was incredibly off-putting.
So they were just like trying too hard? Were you a poser coffee shop?
Trying too hard in the wrong way.
Not as sophisticated as Where You Been?
Where You Been is at least right up front. They're like, yeah, we bought all this stuff at IKEA and Walmart, so you know that couch is kind of comfortable over there. But this place,
and we still do cash for gold,
right? But at first glance, this place has all the pretension of any Los Angeles coffee shop. But then you look at it, and it's like, why am I buying like a Capresso like blade grinder that you can basically get free in a catalog when you order a pair of pants? It was the weirdest thing. And then of course, it being Scottsdale, there was a guy outside in his Ferrari California with dealer plates walking in his camouflage cargo shorts and like beat up Affliction t-shirt.
Okay.
It was an incredibly surreal experience, but I felt like I was being pranked by somebody.
Okay.
Coffee.
Okay. Delicious coffee.
I bought a basketball this weekend, too.
For the coffee?
Yeah, for the coffee.
Did it come with a burr grinder?
It did not. No, I have a burr grinder. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. So, what's the basketball for? You gonna dribble?
To play basketball.
You're going to play basketball? I thought you, like, I thought you busted your back and you're, you know, partially paralyzed sometimes and take vast amounts of medication.
No, I'm not on medication, and my back still does hurt a great deal most of the time, but I have found the remedy is...
To jump up and down?
No, I don't know why that I didn't realize it, but it's just about a half hour of... It's about a half hour of incredibly painful stretching is the remedy for reducing the back pain. So you inflict a little bit more, and then you feel better.
Because it's almost like you're letting the muscles move so that they don't atrophy and cause more pain.
The counterintuitive thing is that it's the leg muscles that ruin the back.
Well, you should have lifted to your legs.
Not in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't
gotta work on your quads. You gotta blast those quads.
No, I don't want to blast the quads. You just need to make them flexible. But there's, you know, like a park or two around here, and that's really nothing else other than like the Safeway.
Do you do downward dogs?
So, no, I don't do downward dog. I do, the vast majority of the physical therapy stretches are, I think, taken from yoga, but no, I don't do that one.
Okay. Is that just because of the name? You have something against dogs?
No, it's just that stretch doesn't work the things that are painful.
Ah. Okay. So, I don't even know where, I think we're done with the movie, I want to say we might be done with the show.
Let me look at my notes to see if I missed anything else.
I'm sure we missed something.
I like that the background to the third act, the play within a play, said RKO Radio Picture. Because, I mean, this is obviously mentioned as being a parody of horror movies from somewhere between the 30s and the 70s, and RKO just wasn't a thing anymore, so I thought that was kind of cute that was in there.
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't a thing anymore back then.
Right, that's what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And then
would you think of the special Fox, 20th Century Fox music at the beginning?
I took note of it. It was intriguing. It clearly sort of led the way for this musical endeavor we were about to take part in.
Did you like the lips?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how they did that, and I think they just painted a face black, didn't they?
Probably.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't think you'd get away with that these days. It'd have to be CG.
Well, there was a little bit of matting. I think they used a cutout that you can slide into the matte box to remove the additional extraneous light or people in the background. But yeah, there it was clearly black paint against the red paint.
Yeah, it's just exposure.
The other note I got in here is the King Kong climbing at the very end there, where Rocky goes up the radio tower.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a funny little nod.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That whole movie being pillar boxed was uncomfortable.
Yeah, the 185. I totally was not anticipating that the iTunes version of the movie would be in that, because whenever I've seen it like on TV or whatever, they you know, it used to be 4x3. Ugh, god. And then they'd, you know, put it at, you know, a normal HD resolution, because, you know, people at home think there's something wrong with their television sets if there is any amount of black on the screen at all. That it everything needs to fit the screen, and people don't understand why it doesn't. So I was really curious about why they decided to go with the 185. It's fine. It's not like a huge pillar box black bars on either side, but it was still like a little like, oh, that's not normal. Because I don't really watch a lot of like 185 movies.
You? Yeah, you haven't seen what's the new Wes Anderson movie that I told you to go watch?
Oh,
Grand Budapest.
Yeah, Grand Budapest and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
yeah, that one.
What if Wes Anderson did an Indiana Jones movie?
Oh god, that hurts my brain so much. I don't even want to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it would be worse or better than Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
It would be insufferable is the only way I could describe it.
But Bill Murray would have to be the villain, right?
You know, Bill Murray's been all over the press lately because he's got a new movie out, St. Vincent. I don't know if you saw Merlin retweeted the interview of him on Howard Stern, I think it was. Yeah. It's in his Huff Duffer too. I listened to that. It's fascinating to listen to that guy just because he's just completely so weird. I mean, and all the stories you hear about how weird he is, they barely do it justice.
Mm. Yeah, the just randomly showing up at people's parties and photobombing and all kinds of crazy stuff.
I mean, just the idea that a guy of his stature doesn't have an agent or a manager, and to get a hold of him, you just basically, you do your best to figure out a way to get a script to him or find his phone number and leave him a message, and if he likes it, he'll call you back.
Yeah, well, he doesn't really need to do the work anymore. He's kind of set. So might as well just have fun.
One of the things he was talking about, I think, on the Stern interview was how, like, he doesn't want, like, email or an online presence because it's just, there are too many relationships already, and he has to text because his kids won't answer the phone, but it's already like, yeah, I don't want to get involved in any of that because I don't want any more people in my life. But the way that he deals with his work is just, you know, come and find me.
Yeah, well, see, that's one of those things that I always think is strange, though, is that I see so often, like, that, you know, that one fake Bill Murray account that's on Twitter? People keep retweeting for some reason because they think it's actually Bill Murray, and it's just like, you know how there's like Twitter verified? I wish there was another thing they could put up that just said, this is not really Bill Murray.
It's called the mute forever button. I did that with some of the Hangover characters parodies a long time ago.
Yeah, well, it's not even like obviously a parody. People think that this is Bill Murray that they're following, which is bizarre.
Especially considering the bio says this is not Bill Murray.
Yes. Well, no one's perfect.
$1.2 million budget for the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and the gross in this one actually does include rentals, which I think is smart because this is a movie that has never, ever been taken out of circulation, and it says $140 million.
Yes.
That is that's pretty good profit margin there.
Yeah.
Tim Cook is probably jealous.
Yeah, and the customer sat is really high.
The customer sat is just a question mark.
Customer sat from Satsylvania. Another thing, I was like fantasy casting, like draft style, I don't know, like different people, different podcasters to be the different characters of this. Like, if you were going to like stage an audio version of this using only the podcasters that are around, like, who would you cast? And I think I would cast Matt Alexander as Dr. Frankenfurter, of course. And I think I would cast Mike as Boswick's character. And I don't know who I would pick for Susan Sarandon, but it might be Serenity Caldwell. But I'm sort of stumped with everyone else. I mean, maybe Dr. Scott is either Stephen Hackett or John Siracusa. It's a bit of a toss-up. And I don't know who to pick for Rocky, but maybe Casey. But I don't really want to pick Casey. I would like to pick somebody else, but I gotta do some more research, I guess.
No, I'm definitely gonna side with you for Syracuse for the doctor. Mm-hmm. Rocky's a tough one. You need sort of a an unobtrusive heavyweight of a character who can stand his own in those scenes, but not get in the way.
But He doesn't really need to actually stand because he it would be audio.
Sure. No, I get you. Maybe like an Andy Notko or something?
Maybe.
Well, I mean, Snell's likable.
Yeah, but I don't think I would guess Snell is Rocky Horror. I don't know. I gotta think about that.
Have that sort of Tarzan, George of the Jungle vibe that we know on the podcasts?
Jason Seifer from IRL Talk? Is it Seifer or Cypher? Or, I don't know.
Either way, but I don't know where you connect those two dots.
Or maybe Merlin, if it's just audio only.
Because he lives way out there in San Francisco, which is just like the jungles of Africa.
What? No? Because he's a reanimated numbskull person. Oh, no, that, I didn't mean it like that. Okay, let me try to rephrase that.
Merlin is Tarzan?
No.
Well, he is battling wild cats in his backyard right now.
Yeah, it was a disturbing episode to listen to, mostly for the pink slime chili stuff. But
Once he makes the Savannah cat his pet, he will be Tarzan and will be able to fit right into the role of
Savannah cat chili. And then I don't know who to pick for Columbia and Magenta. And I don't know who to, which is, you know, probably because there are so few female podcasters.
Well, I mean, Faith around. Is already a dancer, so.
Yeah, but there's no actual dancing. But yeah, I could see Faith. Oh, and then for Magenta, I don't know, maybe someone from Isometric. Maddie Myers, no. I don't know. Anyway, so the casting for this is a little nonsensical. And I don't know Don't know who to pick from. Who would Meatloaf be?
Oh, that is a good question.
Would Merlin be a better Meatloaf than he would be a...
I was going to say John Roderick would be Meatloaf.
Oh, that's a good point.
Do we have a riffraff yet? Because I'm going to vote for Dan Benjamin.
No. No. Maybe Moises or
Dalrymple, because he's got the hair.
No, I don't think so. I don't know. It's a voice thing. I don't know who can do the weaselly little master voice. That's a little open-ended. We'll figure that one out. Oh, let's just put a pin in it. Just spitballing here. The end.
Oh, God.
Are you gonna do a musical number to sing us out of this one? Because I think I crashed and burned it.
There's not a chance I could possibly sing,
not a chance you could possibly sing, even no. If somebody from Albuquerque was standing right behind you.
Nope.
Okay.
No. There is no singing that occurs with me. No, never will. No, it's just not gonna happen.
Do you sing sometimes when no one's around? If a tree falls in the forest and no one's around to hear it.
I want to say I do occasionally really loudly in my car with terrible music from the 90s, but it's incredibly infrequent based on the fact that I don't really get in my car very often.
Do you sing along to Kesha? These are important questions, Dan.
I wouldn't say that I have never, but...
That's an interesting response. I'm gonna fill that one out on this binary form as yes.
Well,
singing totes, singing.
When listening to those songs, I'm not compelled to sing along, but I wouldn't put it past me to have done so in the past.
Okay. So what you're saying?
So what I'm saying is I'm running for political office with my wishy-washy answers.
Yes. This is welcome to the wishy-washy cast with with Dan Sturm, who may or may not like something, and it's okay if you like it, but maybe he doesn't, but maybe he does, maybe it's okay.
It's the How Am I Doing podcast. You're all my constituents.
Oy. Oy. Dan.
Yeah. You want to do some post-show follow-up?
Is there a post-show? Do we have an After Dark? Is that copyrighted? Can we? What is this, a B-side? No, that's also copyrighted. What can we call this?
We call it the
cutting room floor.
Sure. Why the hell not? What's less focused than defocused? Short ends.
What's a short end?
Short ends are the film that people don't shoot, but isn't long enough to do another take. So it's unused film that they take out of the magazine and just resell to film students who can't really afford to buy regular film themselves.
Oh, I like how you went straight to something totally obscure that even I don't know.
It's film industry crap. Same thing with most of our stuff.
Well, but that's actual film. Like, it's
I know. People still shoot film.
Okay, Christopher Nolan.
When poor college students need to buy film, they often buy short ends from other larger productions who don't use it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just keep it in your freezer for like 10 years because you're still writing your masterpiece film. And then by the time you do shoot it, it looks like you're shooting through sandpaper.
Yes. Your magnum opus. Have you seen Primer? Primer?
Yeah. No, I have not.
You should watch that because you're going to hate the crap out of that. Because it was also, I think, probably filmed on short ends because it is so grainy and
that's
terribly shot at night for no reason.
Who did that movie?
Shane Calrith, something. There's Shane's the first name, I think.
Crap, he just did that other movie this past year.
Yeah, the something color or something.
Upstream Color, yeah. Yeah.
I didn't see that one. I assume
you should see Upstream Color.
Uh-huh, cuz did he cast himself in 15,000 different roles?
I don't know what he looks like. Shane Carruth?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what he looks like.
Oh, well, look at somebody in his film and it's probably him. That's kind of mean. Primer on the surface was fine, and it was I don't know if it's Primer or Primer. I've heard it both ways.
I've only heard it Primer.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
it's like that gray paint you put on your El Camino.
No, but I think it's Primer because of the other thing that has to do with science that I don't know. Anyway, it's got some really intricate time travel stuff inside of there, and it is certainly not as wacky or as crazy as anything we normally review, but just the when you were talking about film quality, that's what made it spring to my mind.
I believe he shot upstream color on a prosumer sort of mirrorless DSLR, and it's great that he went all run and gun gorilla on it, but you should see it just for the
everything table. Jello vision.
I remember everything being a little flat and kind of pastel, but all of that takes a backseat to the table flipping maddening plot. So,
oh well, you're really gonna like the other movie that I, never mind. So what are we doing with our quote unquote short ends? No one can see me quoting right now. Listeners, I'm breaking the fourth wall. I'm quoting. Continue.
Oh God.
Yeah,
I was gonna tell you. I watched Moonraker. Well, I watched part of Moonraker, and Goldeneye, as I mentioned yesterday.
Well, he goes in search of his quest for gold, which doesn't make any sense because it's not really what he does. The lyrics to Moonraker, I don't understand because it has nothing to do with the movie.
I'm not talking about that movie anymore. I'm talking about Moonraker. I freaking watched Moonraker.
Well, that's what I said. Moonraker. The lyrics to in the song for Moonraker make no sense because they have nothing to do with what happens in the film.
Oh, I don't remember that. Is that the opening credits or any credits?
The opening credits, because that's where the song is. Where they dun 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 dun, and then they do the thing.
Yeah, I came in halfway. Okay, but you didn't like my theory about Goldeneye being the same story as Fight Club, huh?
No, I didn't appreciate it.
did you have a moment to think about it to realize that I was right yet?
No, it's. But he doesn't get a cool car, and. No watches explode. I mean, stuff explodes. I mean, I guess, but there's no satellite dish.
We're talking about the story. We're not talking about the little bits and pieces.
There's no EMP. There's
in Fight Club.
Yeah, there's no EMP. It's just other explosions. And
it's an explosion that blows up.
Spoiler alert! This isn't a Fight Club episode. Someone's gonna be very angry with this.
It was the same guy. Like there. Spoilers. Oh, who cares?
Dan.
Nobody knows what I said.
You slay me, Dan. Rosebud was a slay.
I don't think I've ever actually seen that movie.
Oh, God, you would hate it. Is that
the one that was shot entirely with an 18mm lens because they could, and then just film critique students hold that up as, like, an amazing decision by a director?
I don't know that. They do a lot of really intricate camera work in that film. I don't think they shot it all in 18mm. I think.
No! That was the quote unquote everything's in deep focus one, right?
Yes. They used the deep focus thing a couple times. It's charming. When you look back on it now at this stage that we're in our lives, you can apply the lens, so to speak, of history, so that you can try to picture how this must have looked to somebody back then who had only seen like Charlie Chaplin films.
This being defocused, our lens is probably smeared with Vaseline for a look.
Yeah, the Barbara Walters special.
Can you believe people actually used to do that shit?
Yes. Well, you got to make people look pretty, and you couldn't do what we do now, which is just roto blemishes and blur them.
Well, the Barbara Walters look, if I recall, is pantyhose on the back side of the lens, not the front.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I don't shoot things, Dan. I don't shoot anything.
You just really shoot down my hopes and dreams.
Yep, the seal of disapproval.
I think we've sufficiently lived up to our title this week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure we could create a flow chart that properly explains how all over the damn place we were with this one.
It was convolved enough.
Do you ever build your own convolves? What kind of shapes do you use?
No, I don't do that. That's for crazy people. Or like if you're doing Speed Racer. What?
Five-bladed iris? Eight-bladed iris?
No. Just round, circle, soft stuff. I mean, if you're putting in that much effort so that somebody needs to like see the specific little shape that you made, and you're not just matching something that photographically occurred, then you're overthinking it, in my opinion.
Well, you're suggesting that I've never photographically shot something that has a heart-shaped iris, which I have, because you can do that sort of thing.
Dan.
Yeah.
Dan.
You can do all kinds of shapes. They make lenses where your iris is basically you cut it out of a piece of paper and slot it in.
Dan.
Yeah.
It's a matter of taste.
What in our history has led you to believe that I wouldn't do such things?
Yeah, I know. Shot through the heart.
Oh, God, I hate Bon Jovi.
Just a jump to the left. And then a step to the right. With your hands on your hips. You're bringing me to time. But it's the pelvic thrust. It really does feel insane. Let's do the time warp again. Let's do the time warp again.
It's hilarious to watch, plus it's a decent song.
Well, you should keep explaining, because it'll just make it funnier.
Yeah, well, okay, so here's how comedy works.
Three times.
You say a joke. Wait. Here's how you tell them what you're going to tell them, you tell them, and then you tell them what you told them. No, wait, that's the advice my boss used to give me about PowerPoint presentations.
Oh, Dan.
PowerPoint is the best way to express any sort of opinion to other people.
Mm-hmm. PowerPoint to the people.